Accession number 27753, Reel 4.
Mr. Paul Cooper, Reel 4.
Yes, this is Paul Cooper. yes, he's right now. We've got the detonator plugs. Got the wire, let's go back, fix one to the front of the battery, and then he said, put the other one on there, just like that. And instantly, this telegraph pole in two went up flying in the air, 30, 40 feet up in the air, in two. It cut it directly in half, and minus one telegraph pole on the Troon Golf Course. And that's your first appearance of explosives. Now he said, the use of this, if you put that, say, half a dozen pieces with detonators in connected to the same wire under a bridge stanchion, take the blow bridge up, that's the purpose of it, or a dud torpedo, anyway, on board, any obstruction you can destroy or remove in pieces in this fashion. On the golf course. I think another story because I wonder what happened when somebody found one of these poles cut in two and the spectacular sight of one of these poles flying up in the air in two on the professional championship course of Troon, which near the sea, of course.
Were you the only one that was taught how to do this?
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, at that time, I've no doubt there were a few more after me and probably before, but only one at a time. You can't lose too many times, can you? I mean, these things go wrong. And as we walked back, he said, well, tomorrow I'll show you the timing setting of torpedoes and depth charges. How exciting. This really will be fun, won't it? Which I did next day, and showed me how to set depth charges. And of course, when aboard the ship, I was in charge of all that. And on board ship, there's only one magazine person who's appointed, and that happened to be me, which was interesting because the only one is allowed a key. Magazine on board ship, and it proved very useful, which is a story told in secret, of course. Nobody else knows it. That it's rather dumb. If the captain does not go to the armory unless accompanied by the armorer, which as I could, yes, and I was able to take any gun today, any gun apart. Double quick time, certainly quicker than anyone else, to small arms, to the Orlicans, and always in charge of depth charges, and had to disarm or blow up a torpedo. I know precisely how to do that. Of course, we didn't carry torpedoes. What was interesting, I will tell the story now, well, while dwelling on the armory, because when we got to Malta after North African campaign, what is simply called in naval language or any other forces, upholders, they were only too pleased to greet people like me who'd known where we'd been and what we'd done to some extent in North Africa. Here we were on the small island, as you might have heard, the three planes, Faith, Hope and Charity, you've heard of that took care of the island and they kept them going to protect the island. And we got there, upholders.
What's upholders?
Upholders, you're invited home. Upholders, you're invited home for a meal. And in my case, there was a lovely young lady that... daughter that occupied my time to church mainly, and several times we were there several days in waiting for the invasion Sicily and Italy, and I mean days. And they said, you said recently, would you like a bottle of port? I said, you know, fancy this is after a year, I suppose, of war. And I said, well, yeah. Anyway, this two bottles of port. And this is where the armory comes in, because nobody allowed in there. And I kept these in between the ammunition magazines, two bottles of port. And what is really funny today, of course, I suppose I could have been court-martialed, but I'm sure the skipper would like a drink too. But the caps were the orlicans, which could be blasted if you didn't. There were rubber caps that went over the ends of the orlican at sea, which if you had to fire instantly, plane overhead, you could fire through. Little caps about that high, they just went over the end and you could fire. Made a lovely little glass. Yeah. So I creaked down there. Have a tot of port every now and again from this. Oh dear, if only I'd save that orlican cap, you know, today, what it would be worth to me.
Sentimental.
Yes, I was able to drink the two bottles over the period of time. Stayed my nerve, of course. It was medicine. You see, gorgeous port. I still remember. I still like port. I've got. But anyway, that's the story of port.
How were you? You said with that old man that trained you how to use to build the telegraph pole the first day. The second day, you said we're going to do deck charges and torpedoes.
Yes.
Tell me about the process involved in that.
Well, of course, the process of the depth charge, for instance, is that if you know there's a submarine in the vicinity, and of course if you're on the watch altogether mainly for the periscope at sea during night and day, because as you probably know the fluorescent wake, you can see that from far off, even a small periscope going through because of fluorescent wake, little one on the sea, of course, the bow waves, you could see for miles. And then, of course, if you know that, you know perfectly well there's none of our submarines there, so you go at top speed where you last saw it and drop depth charges at intervals, and then come back and drop some more in a pattern. But the idea is, you see, you have, if the periscope's up, you know perfectly well he must be within 20 feet above the water, under the water, I'm sorry. If it vanishes, it could be 30, 60 feet in no time at all. So what you do you have to calculate instantly. There's a little dial on it, a little dial you set to depth, and that you must do straight away, instantly. You're on duty all the time with the orlican supply of this, the orlican lockers, huge ones, which can be emptied in about 2 minutes flat, you know, if they keep a finger on the trigger. But the depth charge, you see, there's this little dial you can set, and it's a matter of water pressure going into a little screw that goes round onto a depth, detonate, presses, the pressure of water at certain depths goes into this and releases the pin, as it were, the explosive device, and it explodes at certain depths, and that's what you have to use, and to be able to do it very rapidly, because you're under full steam.
Did Bill Mann teach you how to do the depth charge training?
Oh yeah, same one.
Did he demonstrate or did he just...
Oh yes, you could on you hope depth charges, you see, which of course been used for demonstration time and time again. but once you get on the ship, you know they're live. And we had six, eight of those all ready to roll off because they're on ramps. It was a game, was a near experience. Near the end, another survival, because when we'd been at sea for almost 3 weeks, we had no fresh anythings, and no proper fresh water. We signaled one of the craft and say, could you supply anything fresh? And I still remember an American destroyer answered our oldest lamp and said, we can let you have some fresh vegetables if you like, and some fresh bread, just baked, you know, very friendly. You come alongside at your own risk. And that's what they said. Fair enough, seas, you know, heavy seas, large.
Where was this?
But
where was this?
In the middle of the Atlantic, but with the convoy.
In the Atlantic?
Yeah, in the convoy. And of course we had the zigzag, it wasn't straightforward. Coming to England, you see, or Scotland. And we had to leave them, it was about 5 days, or as near to Gibraltar as we could. And so we said, right, we'd like to come alongside at our risk, and went along. And we got in the middle of the, we tried three times. We hold, just above the waterline, the destroyer three times with our rams that were sharp on both sides of the bows that the troops went down, which were housed, brought back in housed. But it hit, as the wave came up, it bumped into the side, brought us up and down. We hold it and scraped past. And one time, about the third try, they were able to throw there were cabbage, a sack of cabbage, two or three loaves of bread, which we hadn't sampled for so long, and a half a sack of potatoes, fresh food. But when we, this last time, to make sure they could throw them, because they tried so many times, and the ship was apart, with the wave coming up and throwing us apart, then bumping in, we scraped along that, and caught one of the rams under the deck, their deck charge rack. And we could rip the whole lot off, which were six ready primed. So you can imagine, both of us would have been blown to smithereens before they could have gone forward or we reversed.
Where was their deck charge rack? Was that at the stern or?
Yeah, that at the stern. It could be rolled off, slip the whatever it's called, I forget now, but you could just knock up a pin and the strap would fall and they just roll off as many as you want, and instead of the ship going up again, it did two down, and they were waiting all fractions of seconds to think this is it, because you were watching. I mean, as far as that away, there's a chair with a ramp on the end where they'd thrown the vegetable, and there they were, six on either side, so that they could make a pattern. As I told you, we only had one in the middle and the stern, but there two, there were six depth charts and more standing by.
So this an American destroyer.
Yes, yes.
Did you approach it from the stern with your back?
Yes,
to its
well,
stern?
Yes, coming alongside from the stern, you
right.
See. You wouldn't approach it from the front.
No.
From the bows. Yes, come alongside. And as we did, the sea in between, and bang, as it went down.
What period of time was this?
Hmm?
What period of time was it? What year or what month?
Oh, this is the same across in the Atlantic.
When you were coming across?
Yes, oh yes. When we ran out, about 3 weeks, we ran out of all fresh food.
Right.
And the water was contaminated with salt and diesel oil.
So that's when you stopped off for Bermuda?
Yeah, that's right, after that. Yes,
right,
and that's
well,
the time. Because of a zigzag, and then many times, heading back to America, you'd come this way, go that way, come this way and go to put any waters, even submarines. There were no aircraft, I can recall, except near Algiers, we did have what do they call them, or Sunderland or something, came over as high as you could possibly be, just keeping a watch. Anyway, that's an experience, again, that was very near indeed. Anyway, we did North Africa, poorly tough, really remembering that, in fact, very ill person, certainly mentally, physically, that had his leg blown off a couple of days before. He told me I was only there a couple of days before I was taken back on board, which was kindness of the skipper to keep us all together and me, because I suppose to some extent I was needed. I was part of the.
You had the key for the armoury.
Not with me, but a certainly important part of crew at that time. So, then Bermuda, an experience in my gun locker in my port, which was rather tasty. Who knows?
That was Malta. Malta.
That was Malta. Yes, that was Malta.
What condition was Malta in at the time?
Not too bad, actually. It was pretty. They'd had a number of raids, but not bad, because what use was mortar? And the Germans had, what was the point in trying to take mortar? They'd already lost a great deal of the army there, the panzers in North Africa, Rommel and so forth, a great deal of it being pounded by the 8th Army by then.
You must have been working on the North African coastline for quite a long time.
Oh yes, quite.
In February 42.
Yes.
And then you went to Malta waiting for the invasion of Sicily.
Yes.
Which was July 43.
Yes.
So it was a good 16 months.
Yes, yes, a long time. And we did a lot of it.
Any other incidents you can recall when you were doing this work in the North African coastline?
Not particularly in North Africa. The main thing was that they were so urgently required supplies that we carried, as I told you, the explosive, the rocket ship explosives, get deck cargo. We carried high octane aviation spirit too, which again, a deck cargo, and that's the kind of thing we're expected to do, to keep track with the advances at that time, because of course they'd suffered a great deal, the 8th Army, and so had the French, of course, around the Algiers, and some of the Americans too, which we seldom saw, certainly not in Burma.
you had the torch landings, Operation Torch, in November 42.
Yes.
With the American First Army.
That's right, well, you heard Algiers, around Algiers. Yes, so we have done some homework. Yes, but they didn't affect us at all.
Because the beachy French fired them.
Right. Yes, and pounded. Yes, because we were around there. Oh dear. Anyway, I have mentioned before the experience of the reconnoitering. I love it. The experience of the reconnoitering when with the skipper, which was, we were always together, when I said after in the middle watch, right in the dead of night, and I'd said on the port bow, there's surf on the port bow, 5 degrees of the port bow, and he looked across and looked and he said, there's an island around here somewhere. And within moments, I said, it's closing fast. And we both ducked, because we recognized it instantly, no navigation lights, of course, at all, on either dead or warm, as a German E-boat. And we must have both ducked within 30 feet. And on precisely the same bearing, in passing, and us passing, said, you were right. I don't think we'll say anything about this below decks. Am I meant to be? It's gone. Oh, that's it. I'm sorry. Anyway.
What had happened? You'd spotted the...
I had spotted the bow wave. You see, in reported wave, surf on the 5 degrees of Port Pound, which was almost dead ahead. You see? It's 5 degrees, almost dead ahead, which it was. Passed within moments at that speed. You see?
Did the skipper believe you?
He believed me afterwards.
Oh, well, yeah.
Well, he had to, because there it was, you see. And he said, you were right. We won't sail this below deck.
And this is at night time?
Oh, yes. Pitch black, no navigation light. Anyway, we did that, returned to base safely, which we shouldn't have done. My goodness, we shouldn't have done. Could have been a head-on collision, in fact, quite easily. Any deviation from our course in panic, either craft, and it could have been a complete head-on collision. Very little in it for craft going at speed. Yeah. Anyway.
What was your landing craft doing at the time?
We were reconnoitering. That was just as well, mainly to see. I think it was tested in the navigation system at that time. Hence, he'd considered that there was rock near at hand, you see, to see if there was any opposition or sign of firing. Really, decoys, the absolute twits, you know, waiting for something to happen. And that's what did happen. Anyway, eventually, the landings in Sicily, Syracuse, Catania, interesting, under Mount Etna, by the way. Still remember that, Mount Etna now, when you hear it erupting, or have done in the past years, certainly, was it about 4 or 5 years ago? I brought back memories, and Catania was interesting because whenever we went in there to the harbour, we realised there was a whole dozen, 20, the German abandoned, German small Messerschmitt 109 made into seaplanes, little seaplanes. Yeah, all scattered all over the place, moored there. And I remember carrying Admiral McGregor up there, who vanished below because we hit a squall underneath Mount Etna, and he was rough, absolutely rough. You couldn't see. The rams wanted to take off, and we had to do emergency lashing down, which was interesting, as they were lifting a couple of feet high, which was highly dangerous. We had our deck emergency cargo of diesel came adrift and were bashing around on deck, which was a bit disconcerting to say the least. But again, we did that. We did the most wonderful. A little beach tells me at the moment, and I still remember that. That was the most memorable landing, and the skipper liked me on the telegraphs at that time. I'd landed crucial landings in the wheel deck, in the wheel house, and I received a letter of coming into land, not knowing what was going to happen, of course, ever. Drop keg anchor, catch anchor down, so instead of slow ahead, he said full ahead, and I repeated it, and we hit the beach with a 6-foot draft. Fortunately, it was pebbles. You know what that means? That actually, instead of being about 2 feet of the beach, we were 6 feet onto the pebble. Fortunately, it was pebbles, and eventually the water was able to. But that was wonderful. After the troops had gone, both, you know, spread out all of them and into the village there, I picked that out on the map.
Was this in Sicily?
In Sicily. Initial landings of Sicily. Within moments of the troops vanishing, there were little old ladies, I term them as, ladies and men, bringing down gifts of, I remember, pomegranates and grapes on leaves, peace offerings. Pitiful, really. No fight at all. Anyway, vanished troops. And then we went into Messina. And that was interesting because we actually took a field marshal, that he was then, Montgomery, into his first footing in Italy across the Messina Straits. But before that, we did several landings in Reggio across from Messina. And the first one is what I say when I grew up, because I didn't believe anything could survive the noise and turmoil. And I was so furious as a young man then, was it 19 plus, that I wasn't going to have a grave. And that annoyed me. I didn't ask to be there, and at least I was entitled to a grave, and we'd just be smashed into oblivion. And I always said, from ever after that, anything that moved in front of me, when I landed, re-landed, I just shot. Simple as that. I was so furious, I wasn't going to have a grave.
What happened that day that made you feel that way?
Because of the noise. The shells bursting all around you. This is my first real sign of the cupboards. I found two hiding behind a gun locker. And whereas they'd never mentioned the bird. Yeah. Have you had some?
Yep.
Sure. Yeah, let's have another. To continue, Paul Cooper. Yes. Now, it was because that mainly I didn't see why I should be there at all as a young person. The tremendous noise. you couldn't see, if you like, a pocket handkerchief between the explosions, left, right and centre. None of us hit us, but I knew any moment they could, and I wasn't going to even have a grave. I always carried a Thompson submachine gun, which we had two on board, and I had one, Skipper had the other, and two 45s, revolvers, and could fire them both quickly, two 45s, which is another story. But here we are, and eventually landed safely, our troops returned.
Where were you landing at the time? Where was the landing?
Reggio.
Reggio.
Yes.
So this is the first time you landed in Reggio.
Yes. Yes.
You didn't have Montgomery at the time.
Yeah. No. Then we did several trips, and eventually, who should come aboard was Montgomery, who spent the time across the Messina Strait out of sight. And I did just mention that when he came off on board, which was a memorable occasion, I'd already been introduced to him. And of course, what we did know, he was an outcast, really, because he promised the Eighth Army soldiers, veterans of the Eighth Army from Africa, get this job finished and we'll be on your way home. And here they were. We were taking the same people from Sicily into Italy. Still not finished, and they were embittered. We know that because each load we took, 240 troops, we knew they were different. And here he was going in, and he came on board just as the moment before we actually docked. We were, in this case, docking. And he said out loud, "Good morning, boys. Full of beans, I hope." and all in one chorus, which still shakes me to this day. It doesn't embarrass me, but it did the skipper. I looked the other way because they said, "Yes, sir, Heinz beans, baked beans, string beans, haricot beans." It has a chorus, spontaneous, which was most wonderful. How it all came out couldn't possibly have been rehearsed in any way. And the different beans we've been subjected to over the months and years, if you will, was tremendous. And here he was, "Oh, good." And the skipper, the brightest red I'd ever seen of anyone's face to that date. Anyway, it was pathetic because the Italians in that case were just giving themselves up. I found it very sad due to today, especially when I saw them just a week ago today, in fact, in Florence, having a big parade of army. And I thought, you know, I've defeated you. And they didn't have a fight in them. And terribly